The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. It's a busy time of year with graduation weekend just up ahead. Finals are all done, but I'm sure the frantic grading of them all is not. Well, we're not on YouTube today. We're just on our regular channels here at KPCG or on 101.3 on the FM dial. If you've been keeping up with our latest experiment, we've just been doing that over the last few days. It's still some pretty new technology, though. I didn't really want to, wasn't quite ready to hand that off for someone else yet, just in case something went wrong and I was stuck in the studio talking and not able to fix any technical problems. But if you have been watching our YouTube experiment where we've been putting up the audio along with some video clips and other pictures of the articles Mr. Flurry is quoting from, so you can go and look those up yourselves, those kind of things. Anyway, if you have any feedback, let us know. We're open to ideas. It's been, like I said, a bit of an experiment. If you have any comments, suggestions on the show, you can send it over at td@kpcg.fm. If you have any more maybe technical ideas for our YouTube streaming, you can let me know at my... You could just email me personally at richardpalmer@thetrumpet.com. I am trying to get more pictures and graphics up there. I just react way too slowly. But I will get faster. Well, on to the subject of our actual show today. Today we have a pretty simple theme for the next 55 minutes. Gold. Or rather, black gold and yellow gold. Both are making a huge impact on the news right now. Both are hugely important to the global economy. And so we're going to start the first half with talking about black gold. Like we had a bit about on some of the earlier programs this week, Iran has made a couple of dramatic pushes at global oil supplies over the last few days. And now, when we're talking about oil and oil prices, this is a story that pretty much affects everyone. This is where world events start to impact your paycheck, where world events can mean you end up paying more at the pump to fill up your car. But then the implications spread much further than that. The world's economy runs on oil. And we'll talk about some of the dramatic implications that high oil prices can have later. But to recap some recent news, a couple of weeks ago, the US banned Iran from selling any oil anywhere in the world. It had some waivers on Iran that, okay, sanctions were in place for most countries if they bought Iranian oil, but the US said they would tolerate certain countries, India, Italy, China, quite a few others, I think South Korea, from buying, they would allow them to buy that oil. That ended a few weeks ago, and Iran is not very happy about that. It's making it very hard for them to sell their oil to get all that cash that they're used to. It's reducing global oil supplies by about 1 million barrels per day, according to estimates. And when America announced that this trade was going to be cut off, that Iran was going to be banned from selling this oil, Iran responded by threatening to attack ships sending oil through the Straits of the Hormuz. And well, over the weekend, they may have done just that. Here's some news from over the weekend. This is clip three.
Tonight, amid growing tension with Iran, calls of sabotage near the world's most important oil trading route. Four oil tankers targeted near the entrance to the Persian Gulf. Video showing a gash in one ship's stern at the waterline, appearing like it was rammed or hit by a projectile. It comes just days after the U.S. warned commercial vessels in the region that Iran and/or its regional proxies could target commercial sea traffic And 1 week after the U.S. sent a carrier strike group and B-52 bombers to the Gulf because of fears of possible Iranian attacks on U.S. forces.
So last week we heard about that carrier strike group. We heard that, I think one report was saying that America had received some intelligence that had been passed on to them from Israel, warning them that Iran was up to something. They warned about shipping, and now it does look like Iran is behind this attack on four oil vessels close to the Straits of Hormuz, this crucial oil checkpoint. The Wall Street Journal, they wrote, the news of the attack sent oil prices higher and heightened worries about global supplies amid petroleum production outages because of unrest in Venezuela, a civil war in Libya, and sanctions on Iran. They wrote that an initial U.S. assessment indicates Iran likely was behind the attack on two Saudi Arabian oil tankers and two other vessels damaged over the weekend near the Straits of Hormuz, a U.S. official said. A finding that, if confirmed, would further inflame military tensions in the Persian Gulf. This assessment, while not conclusive, was the first suggestion by any nation that Iran was responsible for the attacks. A bit further down in that article, they note a third of the world's liquefied natural gas and almost 20% of total global oil production flows through the Straits of Hormuz for export from Persian Gulf countries. Cutting off oil shipping through that strait would cause shortages and soaring prices. And the importance of that strait, I just find that mind-blowing, that it, you know, not just 20% of oil that's shipped over the sea or anything like that, but that was 20% of total oil that's produced anywhere in the world, it comes out through that little sea lane. And I didn't have it in front of me, but if memory serves me correctly, the actual maritime traffic lanes, the areas of the sea that all of these ships funnel through, I think are only 20 miles wide, one in each direction, in those Straits of Hormuz. So 20% of global oil supply going through this tiny, tiny sea gate. And with these attacks, it appears Iran's demonstrating that they can hit that they can threaten that. Reuters had a similar report. I think this was from yesterday. They noted a U.S. government source said American security experts believe Iran gave its blessing to tanker attacks. And then it talks about who they were hit. The source said that the United States believes Iran's role was one of actively encouraging the militants, but indicates that the United States does not now have the evidence that Iranian personnel played any direct operational role. So pretty typical for the way Iran does things in these kind of situations, where it wasn't literally people, it looked, at least based on these reports, you know, not literally people wearing Iranian military uniforms or the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Instead, it's a terrorist group that gets its funding from Iran, its training from Iran. You know, for all intents and purposes, it is Iran, but that slight degree of separation of it being a militant group means that the rest of the world is much less likely to actually take care of the problem and do something about the cause of it. So that was the first piece of news to do with threatening oil supplies. Then on Tuesday, we had this. This is clip four.
Saudi Arabia's state-owned energy company Aramco has stopped pumping oil through a major pipeline after a drone attack. Houthi rebels in Yemen say they launched the strikes to warn the kingdom to stop its aggression. The east-west pipeline, 1,000 kilometers north of Yemen, was reportedly struck by two drones. Earlier, the Houthis said they were responsible for 7 drone attacks on the border with Saudi Arabia.
So Iran, they're demonstrating that, well, yeah, we can threaten your ships. We can have terrorists attack your ships. And of course, you know, everyone knows if Iran gets involved more directly, it can do a huge amount more damage than just what that small attack did on Sunday. And then it's showing, well, even these oil pipelines, even if they're not at sea, well, we can have our proxy groups take those out too. Those Houthi rebels from Yemen, they are backed and supported by Iran. So again, Iranian proxies attacking oil supplies. And this pipeline, it runs from Saudi Arabia's oil-rich eastern provinces over to the Red Sea, in a Red Sea port. And part of the reason why Iran has this pipeline is so that it can get away from the Strait of Hormuz choke point. So that, you know, if Saudi Arabia is sending all of its oil out of the Straits of Hormuz, well, Iran can hold them to ransom. They can say, you know, or they can threaten to attack ships coming through there. Iran has a lot of coastline around the Straits of Hormuz. They are in the best position of anyone to shut that down. And so they can threaten Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia builds this pipeline all the way across to the Red Sea. Okay, great. Now we can send our oil out over the sea and not have that come anywhere near Iran. That goes out into the Red Sea, the other side of the country. So they do that, and then you have the Houthi rebels here attack that pipeline too. All right, doesn't matter. Even if your oil that's not coming out of the Strait of Hormuz, you know, we can still reach that. And that that pipeline was, they had to shut that down. I believe they're still exporting the same amount of oil. They're just using some other channels. But they're giving the world a taste of what they can do. And I think they certainly could do a lot more. We'll talk about what they may do in the future later. I don't think that necessarily this time around they're going to go full on closing the Straits of Hormuz. But it's certainly a very pushy act showing what they're capable of. Oilprice.com, they had an article yesterday talking about exactly what Iran is up to here. And they said the Fujairah, that's where Iran attacked those ships. And the Saudi pipeline attacks, however, fall totally in line with the expected war by proxy supported by Iranian-supported entities such as Hezbollah, Hamas, Houthis, or Iranians hardliners in the IRGC. The Fujairah issue needs to be seen as a possible first sign by proxies that no oil or gas infrastructure is out of reach. By striking the area offshore Faruja, the culprits have shown they can threaten Saudi or Emirati oil tankers, suggesting that the Straits of Hormuz could be the next target. At the same time, it is a major reminder that global trade flows, Europe and Asia, are in the crosshairs, upping the pressure on the European partners in the JCPOA discussions. So they're showing no oil is off limits. None of your infrastructure is off limits. The article continues, the drone attacks by Houthis and Saudi Arabia on the pipeline are a double signal. The first one is not to think that the Yemen conflict is heading for a solution. The second one, and for oil and gas analysts, the more important, is that no Saudi energy infrastructure is out of reach. They're really going after oil supplies here. Some could even say that Rijah, that's Saudi Arabia, got another message, most probably instigated by Tehran, that not only the Gulf is in danger, the Red Sea is also within reach. The Houthi drone attack will not have been executed without the full support of IRGC sources, as it is too dangerous for them to play this game right now. So, not only are they looking at threatening all this oil in the Straits of Hormuz, but the Red Sea too. Now, here at The Trumpet, we've drawn a lot of attention to Iran's potential to hurt the U.S. using oil. And here's what Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry said in a Key of David program about exactly the kind of potential that we're seeing right now.
The Houthis, after they overthrew the American-supported government and got control, most of the control themselves, the very first chant they made was death to America. And then secondly, death to Israel. Now, their number one enemy in the world is America. That is Iran and their radical followers and radical terrorists that support them. Do you think they would just relish cutting off all the oil to Europe and America? Well, of course they would. They would do it in a flash if they thought they needed that to get control, more control of the Middle East. And yet we keep assuming that everything will work out fine, but it isn't going to work out fine. They hate America most of all. And they have the power to, well, you could say, to wreck our economy. And what are we doing about it? What is happening? They call us the great Satan. And they call our number one ally in the Middle East the little Satan. Are they a danger to us?
They have the potential to wreck America's economy, wreck the world economy. And that's what these activities over the last few days were about. Now, as I said, I don't think they're necessarily going to do that right now. Maybe they will. We'll look at what's prophesied shortly. But what they are doing is sending the message, we can shut this down. You know, we can really hurt you. We have the ability to do that. But let's look briefly at some of the, you know, the implications of high oil prices to the global economy. Because, you know, there's the Iranian, this is a long-term problem facing us, facing our countries, facing the world, as well as just a short-term problem with what Iran's doing in the Middle East. You know, like I said, those sanctions have been taking, the latest round of sanctions have taken an extra 1 million barrels a day off the market. At the same time, the U.S. is squeezing the regime of the of Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. And so, you know, the people of Venezuela are in a horrible position there with his dictatorship, with the socialism. I saw a headline this morning about, I'm trying to remember, it was something about how the price of a Big Mac is now like a average, the same as an average salary or something ridiculously huge like that as inflation spirals out of control. And so America is trying to take care of him. Part of the way they're pushing pressure on Maduro is by sanctioning Venezuela's oil trade. Just even with what's going on there, their oil exports have collapsed. In 2008, they were producing 3 million barrels a day of oil. As of March this year, that was down to 840,000. So a massive drop. And as I said, America is squeezing that further. They, again, a couple of weeks ago, right around the same time that the Iran sanctions came in force, they put on some sanctions targeting the Venezuelan government-run oil company, Petrolas de Venezuela. And then you've got North Africa. We've got an article coming up in the next Trumpet print that I think is going off to the printers in the next day or two, probably. I can't remember whether it's this week or next, but certainly very soon, talking about the situation there, where you've got the civil war in Libya, and you know, there's a 1 million barrels per day of oil that soon might not be making it to the market, or might not making it out to the world if that civil war gets worse. And certainly, you know, it looks like over there, Haftar, the strongman who kind of initiated the latest round of fighting, he seemed like he thought he'd get a quick victory. That hasn't happened, so there's certainly the potential for that to widen. And you've got the potential for that conflict to spread. You know, we talked about Algeria on this show and the potential for great unrest there and all the oil and especially the natural gas that Europe gets from Algeria. Now, Saudi Arabia has promised to make up some of that shortfall. Whether they actually do or not remains to be seen. And they responded very quickly when the initial sanctions on Iran came into place in November. But the U.S. granted more waivers than the Saudis were expecting back in November. And they ended up kind of getting burned. Instead of saving the world from expensive oil, they ended up selling their dwindling supply at bargain basement prices. And they don't want to make the same mistake again. They want to make sure that oil prices actually have risen before they start opening up the pumps and getting rid of more. And then even just their oil company, Saudi Aramco, they opened their books last month and it showed that their big oil field, the Gawahar oil field, is much more depleted than many had thought. So there's potential even for Saudi oil to become more scarce. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard wrote a couple of weeks ago that global spare capacity is arguably as low today as it was during the great oil shocks of the last half a century. We are skating on thin ice. In that article, he cited Westpac Capital's Jean-Louis Lamy, who warned that the spare oil capacity in the economy will fall to 1.2 million per barrels a day by the autumn. This will not be enough to cover demand, even if nothing goes wrong, and a great deal is likely to go wrong, he warned. And these attacks have caused oil to spike at least a little bit, some jumps. He's warning that we could see oil prices at $100 a barrel by the end of the year. And Evans-Pritchard warns that few are prepared for that, so the theatrics could be spectacular. I think that's certainly far from a foregone conclusion, but there's certainly there's a lot of short-term risks from Iran, and Iran is really demonstrating that they can torpedo oil prices, or I guess explode oil prices would probably be the better metaphor. If you torpedo something, it goes down. But that they can blow up oil prices, they can bring these prices up any time that they like. And as I said, this affects everyone. You know, most of us drive, most commute to work. In the US, the average commute time is 26 minutes. Maybe, well, I was going to say maybe some of you are listening to this on your commute. I just heard during the break that KPCG, our website, appears to be down, so that might be unlikely. But if you're listening to this old school over the actual radio, over the radio waves, over the air, maybe you're on your commute right now. But that's, you know, fuel prices increased. We can't cut down on our commuting time very easily. And so high oil prices feed directly into lower disposable income, and thus they affect the whole global economy. But then even if you cycle to work, you're still affected. You know, the agricultural industry is more dependent on oil than any other sector except transportation. You know, farm machinery runs on oil. Many agricultural chemicals, they're made using oil or many more using natural gas. But then natural gas prices are often affected by oil prices because, you know, the two of them can both be used in industry and in developing, in generating electricity. So, you know, you have all of these fertilizers and things like that, or these agricultural chemicals, I guess not fertilizers, but these other chemicals are come from petrochemicals. And then whether it's food, whether it's goods, you know, everything you buy often contains materials derived from oil and gas. It's produced by machines that use oil and gas. It's transported by ships, by aeroplanes, by trucks that use oil. So it immediately feeds through into the whole global economy. The International Food Policy Research Institute, they wrote that international fuel and food prices are closely linked historically. Rising oil prices were closely associated with the 1972 to 1974 crisis and indeed were arguably the dominant factor. And that institute goes on to argue that high oil prices probably played a major role in the 2008 food crisis. And, you know, you remember it was the high food prices back then that ended up shaking the third world, that ended up brought about the Arab Spring and the additional, you know, protesters coming out onto the streets into Egypt. So this is why fluctuations in oil prices draw so much attention. Now, in the U.S., there is an important change to this dynamic in recent years. The fracking boom means that the U.S. is now the world's number one producer of crude oil, which is a huge change over the last few years. Now, the U.S. still consumes about 2 million barrels per day more oil than it produces, but it still produces a whole lot of oil. And so because of that, if oil prices go up, there will be some Americans that benefit from those higher prices. Fracking is expensive. Oil companies have had to borrow very heavily to stay afloat and during the time when oil prices were lower. So higher prices might help keep these countries afloat, might keep these countries in business, could even expand the number of people employed by these businesses. So, you know, in years past, there would have been very few upsides for the U.S. from high oil prices. Now there are some. But the fact still remains that the oil prices affects the whole economy. And sure, there might be some winners within the United States. Most are going to lose out if you have high oil prices. And then if you have Iran closing the Straits of Hormuz and you have catastrophically high oil prices, well, that just feeds right into just an immediate shock to consumers' pockets. Feeds into people not being able to keep their jobs if it's a long commute, or not having enough money at the end of the month to pay the mortgage, and you get foreclosures, and it can very often become a full blown economic crisis. That's what Iran. You know, when you look at all the implications of high oil prices, you see the implications of Iran closing the Straits of Hormuz, of these actions that Iran is threatening. You know, they are looking at that and saying, "Well, that's a nice little economy you've got there." Shame if high oil prices came along and hurt that. As I said, you have all of this oil coming through the Straits of Hormuz. About one-third of seaborne oil travels through the Straits of Hormuz. It was that stat from the Wall Street Journal article earlier was that 20% of all oil produced in the world goes through that narrow passage. And that's not this isn't the world's only choke point. The whole world is really, and the whole global economy, because of how dependent it is on oil, is really dependent on these choke points. The South China Sea, where China's quickly getting control. You see more and more headlines every day about that. There was one this morning about how China's new aircraft carrier means they're done playing defensively. They're ready to expand. They're ready to go on the offense. Well, you know, they're basically building up control of the South China Sea, turning that into a giant maritime choke point. And again, one third of all the world's ocean-going oil goes through the South China Sea. It's basically another Straits of Hormuz. I mean, it's bigger, but then China's building up all of these islands and bases all over it. About 10% of the world's ocean-going oil goes through the Suez Canal and the nearby Sumed Pipeline. 5% through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, that's near Yemen, where the Houthis are gaining a foothold. And they've talked about targeting oil tankers that go through there. And Bible prophecy indicates that this vulnerability to oil could soon play a major role in world events. Now, we've said Iran is demonstrating they can cut off things like the Straits of Hormuz. Cutting off, closing these waterways is much cheaper and much easier than it is to keep them open. You know, it just means throwing, laying a few mines, having fast torpedo boats come in from hidden caves. I saw another article earlier this week just talking about how impossible it would be for America to get rid of Iranian assets in the region just through air power. They'd have to send in troops on the ground. So you're talking about a significant military commitment to try and keep these places open. It's very hard to stop these threats to close them down. And Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 to 45, has a major, major prophecy about Iran. It tells us that Iran... Well, it talks about Iran here as the king of the south, this power that dominates the Middle East. And a couple of programs ago, Mr. Flory went through the Times of Israel piece talking about how, well, imagine how different the Middle East would be if it weren't for Iran. You know, and it just went through bit by bit the Revolutionary Guard Corps. Well, they're sponsoring terrorists here. You know, that article talked about, well, maybe we'd have peace in Israel, maybe the peace treaty, or you know, maybe this. You know, this peace process would be over and that Israel and the Palestinians would have peace if it weren't for Iran sending all of these rockets to Hamas. And maybe they're wrong about having, or maybe that individual's wrong about peace, but at least you'd have a very less capable terrorist groups in that area. You know, imagine Lebanon without Iran, without Hezbollah that absolutely dominates the political scene there, getting all of this money, all of these weapons. Syria without Iran stepping in there when Bashar al-Assad was almost pushed out. They are the king of that region. The king of the south. The king of this whole area in the Middle East and then across North Africa. And that passage in Daniel 11, it tells us that Iran will get control of Egypt, of Libya, and Ethiopia. They're mentioned specifically. It says that this whole verse talks about, or this whole passage talks about Iran and a conflict with a king of the north. And you know, the king of the north, they defeat Iran. And then also the king of the north, they defeat Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia. Verse 43 talks about that, implying that Libya, Ethiopia, and Egypt are all aligned with Iran. And you look at where these are. Well, if Iran gets control of Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia, well, that gives them control of these other major oil choke points. Control of Egypt would mean, well, control of the Suez Canal. Control of Ethiopia would probably include control of the Horn of Africa and that Bab el-Mandeb Strait at the other end of the Red Sea. And we read about those news stories earlier talking about, well, these attacks, Iran's demonstrating that Red Sea oil isn't safe. They have designs on threatening Red Sea oil. And you see that confirmed by these prophecies that, yeah, they're going to get a base on the Red Sea. They're going to control that sea too. They're going to get these other oil choke points. And then you've got Libya in there, an oil producing nation in its own right that would also provide Iran with a strategic base on the Mediterranean, getting all the way on west close to Italy. And Iran already virtually controls Iraq, the world's fourth largest oil producer. But this prophecy really focuses on the implication for Europe. And this Daniel 11 verse 40 describes this clash with the king of the south pushes against a German-led king of the north. That this is where they focus their attention. And there have been news commentators talking about how, well, actually, even what they're doing right now affects Europe the most. Here's a news report from Deutsche Welle, Germany's one of their broadcasters. And they're saying, well, yeah, it might be Iran and America doing most of the talking here, but we're the ones that are most affected by this.
When we have seen this the saboteur attacks here. No one really has said this has been Iran, but it is clear in between the lines that the Saudi Arabians and their allies are blaming Iran for this. Iran is already saying ill thinkers shouldn't try to blame us.
It wants an investigation.
Wants an investigation, and they're saying this could, in the end, be something that sparks something that we can't control anymore. And this is really concerning, especially for Berlin and the Europeans, because they say as soon as the Persian Gulf starts a war, we are going to be the ones that suffer most, because we are the ones that are going to see the implications, not other powers in the world, saying the US.
So they're saying, you know, if there's conflict there, we're the ones that are going to suffer from that. Now, Daniel chapter 11 tells us that this is going to happen. And you know, as you heard from that clip, there are those in Germany that are already concerned about, okay, well, what's going to happen with Iran? If something starts up here, we're going to suffer. And Daniel 11 perfectly describes just the whole character of what we see Iran doing and what we've seen them doing over the last week. But Mr. Flurry, in his King of the South booklet, he wrote that Arab-Iranian control over the Mediterranean Sea and the Red Sea could be the real reason why the US is not involved in the Mideast war in Daniel 11. So that chapter, it talks about Iran and it talks about Europe. It doesn't talk about the United States. He writes that our economy is shaky, the dollar is extremely weak, and Iran could threaten or even cut off all our oil and wreck the US economy to keep America out of the war. So, I mean, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but there's great potential there to hurt the United States. And Iran sees that, and they're threatening that already with their actions this week. In 1994, all the way back in 94, Mr. Flurry speculated that an attack on global oil supplies by Iran would have huge ramifications. He wrote that it could help trigger a collapse of the Western world's weak currencies. This, in turn, could cause Europe to unite quickly into the most powerful economic bloc in the world. That very event is prophesied to occur in your Bible. And this would have, as you said, big, big ramifications in Europe. So that verse, Daniel 11 and verse 40, it says that Iran will push at Germany. Push at Germany in one of the earliest trumpet issues all the way back September, October 1990. Mr. Flurry wrote about this verse. He quoted from the Gesenius Hebrew Chaldee lexicon of the Old Testament, saying that push means to strike, the use of horned animals, or to push with the horn. It writes that it is used figuratively of a victor who prostrates the nation before him. It means to wage war with anyone. And Mr. Flurry wrote, push is a violent word. And that's exactly the kind of foreign policy we see from Iran. You know, a pushy foreign policy that writes, you know, Jerusalem on their missiles and launches them. That where you have their leaders get up and talk about wiping Israel off the map. That humiliates American soldiers when they've blown off course into Iranian waters and takes that opportunity to try and reduce America's prestige in the world. Their development of atomic weapons, like we've seen over the last few years. So we see this pushy foreign policy developing. Now we have a book that talks about this passage, and it really just unpacks so many specifics that are included in that passage in Daniel chapter 11. It's called The King of the South, and it goes through, you know, what you need to know from those verses. Now, it talks about that this prophesied clash in Daniel chapter 11, it probably revolves around Jerusalem when it says that the king of the south will push against Iran. That push is probably going to revolve around Jerusalem, but oil could very well play a major role in that. And we still see Iran's pushy foreign policy in the way that they attack or that they attack global oil supplies. He writes that in this book, Mr. Flurry writes, the king of the south is going to push at the king of the north, probably from its trade route powers. That push will be a dramatic act of war. The Holy Roman Empire will respond with an all-out whirlwind attack, and Iran and radical Islam will fall immediately. And that verse goes through and shows, or this booklet, sorry, the king of the south goes through and shows how Europe is already preparing for that attack. And we just even heard the news media. Well, they know that Europe is going to be affected by anything that happens in this region. The government, the military, they certainly know. And they're preparing their this passage reveals Europe's strategy, Germany's strategy for confronting Iran. It goes through and shows what they are planning. But this whole event, this push, this clash between Europe, between the King of the South and the King of the North, it's a really important event in Bible prophecy. It's a major moment in the outline of end-time events that God has in the Bible. You can read, you know, this prophecy is right at the end of Daniel chapter 11. You can read straight on over the chapter break into Daniel chapter 12. And, well, it talks about the reward of God's people. It talks about Michael standing up. It talks about a time of trouble such as there never was. So there's some trouble on the horizon. But then it talks about, well, they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. Now, there's a happy ending for this whole period as well. But Daniel chapter 11 is a key passage on the road to that happy ending. So you can get our book, The King of the South, on our website, thetrumpet.com. That will take you through this prophecy and show you exactly what is happening in the world here, how to watch it, why you should keep watching that. So you can, as I said, you can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go at the top right-hand corner, click on the library tab, go to books and booklets, and then I think you have to go and by default it showcases some of the just a few books and booklets. Go to all, and you can find the King of the South booklet. We'll ship it to you, or you can read it online. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll switch from talking about black gold to talking about yellow gold.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Well, we were talking about black gold in the first half of the program, oil. But now I'd like to talk about a different gold rush that's on. A gold rush, this time for, you know, real gold rather than some kind of metaphorical gold. This time, though, it's not prospectors panning for grains in streams. It is central banks buying up gold by the ton. You know, governments are buying up huge amounts of gold. Those central banks, those governments that have their gold overseas, they're quickly bringing it back home. What's behind this sudden demand for this precious metal? Last year, central banks bought 74% more gold than they did the year before. It was the second biggest year for gold purchases on record, bigger than any since the United States left the gold standard in 1971. That's pretty huge. Biggest gold purchases since America left the gold standard. And actually, I just saw a headline this morning talking about, well, for the first quarter of 2019. Well, that was even bigger than the first quarter last year in terms of central bank gold purchases. Central banks purchased over 700 tons of gold. That's more than the weight of two jumbo jets. At current prices, that would be around $27 billion. Russia led the way. They boosted their gold holdings by about 15%. That's after several years of increasing. They really have been, you know, out in front in terms of acquiring gold. In December, China bought gold for the first time in 2 years. And since then, it's been buying more and more. It actually made the news with its gold purchases just last month. Here's clip two from Bloomberg on that.
Yeah, they've been going on a gold buying spree, the PBOC. This is the fourth straight month of adding to their gold reserves, adding about 11.2 tons for the month of March, taking their total holdings of gold to about 60.6 million ounces. So this is leading China, is expected now by the end of 2019 to be the second largest buyer of gold if they continue on this pace after Russia. China is the largest producer and consumer of gold, by the way, but they have been adding to their own reserves. And it's added to some optimism that central banks are going to continue to build their holdings of the yellow metal. Goldman Sachs, by the way, predicting that prices in the next 12 months are going to rise to about $1,450 an ounce, currently a little below $1,300.
Someone got a bit overboard on an elegant variation there. Trying to find synonyms for gold is hard, but I think it's faintly ridiculous just to refer to it as the yellow metal. But anyway, China buying lots and lots of gold. As I said, this is a trend that stretches far beyond just Russia and China. In 2017, Turkey started buying gold for the first time in 25 years. They continued purchasing in 2018. Hungary once had tiny gold reserves, and they boosted their gold reserves tenfold, 10 times over last year. Massive gold purchases. Poland, they boosted their holdings by 25%. And then, you know, a whole range of countries buying more gold. India, Kazakhstan, Iraq, Mongolia, Azerbaijan. And no central bank really sold significant amounts of gold. There were some that, you know, that they sold, if I remember correctly, maybe a ton or two, but it was all in pretty paltry amounts. So you've got, you know, lots of trading. But then, as I said, there's lots of people bringing their gold home. Germany got this started, I think it was back around 2013, something like that, when they declared they were no longer content to have their gold sit in the vaults in the United States. They were bringing that home. We had a news report at the time, actually, a video news report on it. Here's a quick clip from that story.
Berlin is probably only beginning to repossess its gold reserves. The Bundesbank's announcement indicates that German leaders believe the global economic crisis may soon intensify. On January 15th, The Telegraph's Ambrose Evans-Pritchard said that the move represents an extraordinary breakdown in trust between leading central banks. Evans-Pritchard compared Germany's actions to what happened in the 1960s when the post-war currency system fell apart and France withdrew its gold from the United States. Precious metals analyst Jim Sinclair said that the Bundesbank announcement may herald the end of the global fiat dollar system. Sinclair said that France's actions in the 60s caused American financial leaders to panic. History will look back on this salvo as being the beginning of the end of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of choice, he said.
So that could well have been a big deal with Germany, and they really did. You know, that got things started, Germany bringing their gold home. They've got it all back now. And now a whole load of other countries have followed suit, wanting to bring back their gold. France, the Dutch have done it, the Austrians. There were reports last year about Turkey bringing their gold home. It's hard to verify that one. Hungary brought all of its gold reserves back from the UK. Romania, they're working on bringing those home from the UK. So they're buying more gold, but they also want to make sure that their gold is under their own control in their own country. And it's not just central banks that are concerned about gold. Steinbeis Research Center for Financial Services, they published a study last month that found that private German citizens hold a record amount of gold. Nearly 9,000 tons of it. That's a huge, huge figure. I guess just trying to do the math very quickly, that's what, maybe something like 20, 23 jumbo jets worth of gold in terms of weight. That figure has risen by about 246 tons since 2016 and by 1,360 tons since 2010. They've been buying huge amounts of gold. At today's prices, that's worth about $340 billion just bought since 2010. The survey found that 38% of the German population owns gold bars or gold coins. I think it's kind of a fascinating insight into Germany. I mean, I didn't look up the figures, but I imagine it's dramatically less for the UK and the US. I mean, I certainly don't think one in two almost of all the people I know have gold bars or gold coins. I certainly don't have any, so please don't try and rob my house. You won't come away with any gold. But then when you combine private and government holdings of gold together, Germany has about 6.4% of global gold reserves. And then meanwhile, over in Europe, in the Eurozone, you're having a fight breakout about exactly who owns the gold. Because Italy, the politicians there are pursuing a new law that would allow the government to take over the Bank of Italy's gold reserves. And they're talking about selling them and using the money to fund massive social programs. Now, Italy has the world's third largest gold reserve. So this is a big deal if the government can take control of that. So then the European Central Bank has been setting in and saying, no, you can't control. They haven't disputed the ownership, but they have disputed control. You don't control that gold. You're not allowed to do that. They said that the European Union, the treaties that Italy has signed with the EU, give the European system of central banks sole authority over the gold. And he said that the European Central Bank President Mario Draghi said that his bank must approve any large-scale sales of Italian gold. So you're getting this tussle breakout in Europe over the world's third largest gold supply. Everyone's trying to get their hands on it. But why all this fuss about gold? A big part of it is distrust of America and the dollar. Countries want to dump the dollar. They don't want to rely on the United States. They see America's massive debt. They don't want to invest in treasury bonds anymore. They don't want to put their money in the United States. Well, where are your alternatives? Right now, for the moment, there isn't a great alternative in terms of other countries. You know, the euro is still a shaky currency. It hasn't fixed its problems that it had from the financial crisis. So investing in the euro doesn't seem particularly safe, doesn't seem like a great alternative to the dollar. Now, China is known for cheating on the value of its currency, and it's a dictatorship. It could start doing that again anytime it chooses to. So, again, not a really secure investment. So not a lot of alternatives. So gold is one. And as you heard in that clip from that news report from a few years ago, that this big shift to countries saying, well, not only, you know, we want gold, but we want control of our own gold. We want to make sure that we have it. We don't trust America. We don't trust America we don't trust their currency, and we don't trust them to look after our gold. It's a massive announcement of distrust in the United States. And that's what you're seeing with all of these countries buying gold and this big swing towards countries buying gold. But another reason is uncertainty. You know, buying and storing gold it's a sign of growing uncertainty in the global economy. It's a security risk to store it. It's often not as profitable as holding other assets, especially like some of these complex financial instruments. But you know, if you have some big problems in the economy, if you have some of these paper currencies start to go down, well, gold is still worth something. And so more and more are deciding, well, gold is worth it. Gold Telegraph, they wrote that the move by global central banks to repatriate their gold may be a sign that an economic crisis could be looming in the near future. You know, countries, central bankers, even everyday Germans, they fear that it could come crashing down soon. And so they're stepping up their investment in gold, just in case. And like I said, they want not just to own gold, but to physically secure it. They believe that there's a risk of a crisis is so bad that they can't even trust the Bank of England or the US Federal Reserve to continue holding their gold. Now, generally, they've been happy to have their gold stored in major trading hubs like New York or London so it could be bought or sold. But by bringing it home, they're sending the signal, oh, well, we don't trust you. We think there could be a crisis so bad that you might help yourselves to our gold. Now, at the Trumpet, we've been warning, we do warn that the world is entering a time of major economic or political, even military turmoil. And this gold buying trend, it's hard evidence that governments, that individuals around the world recognize this threat. You know, all around the world right now, central governments are taking real, practical steps to prepare for an economic crisis. They're saying, well, we need to get our gold back. So what do you need to do? What can you do to prepare? What real practical steps can you take? Now, normally when people it's kind of funny when you're reading all these articles about gold, because just about all of them are, not all of them, a good chunk of them are on websites selling gold. And all these articles are basically devoted to telling you how wonderful gold is. When you hear somebody talking like I am about the way central banks are buying up gold, normally it's followed by a sales pitch. You know, call this number, we'll give you a very special price, and you can buy our gold dollars or whatever it is to safeguard your assets, to safeguard your future. Now, I'm not going to do that today. I'm not here to try and sell you gold. But I do have some practical help for you to safeguard your future. Now, with so much at stake based on, you know, economies and all of the, well, it's such an complex, interconnected economy where even, like we said, a oil choke point halfway around the world can torpedo global finances and lead to mass unemployment and even social unrest and everything like that. You had central bank. Well, there's a whole lot of things involved in trying to forecast the future and forecast economic futures. This whole industry is trying to harvest economic data. But here we make our futures, our forecasts, not based on, vast computer algorithms or anything like that. We have a source that's much more comprehensive and much more accurate, the Bible. Now, the Bible does say that a financial crisis is possible. But at the same time, it says that it's going to get so bad that not even owning gold in the long run is going to protect your assets, secure your future in this economy. Ezekiel chapter 7 describes this time, and it even draws specific attention to gold. It says that then shall they cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of wrath of the Eternal, they shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because it is a stumbling block of their iniquity. You know, at this point, food is so scarce that people won't trade it for any amount of silver and gold. No, in a regular, I guess you could call it, economic crisis, paper currency becomes worthless, and gold still has value because at least it has some intrinsic worth. But here things are just going to get so bad that the only thing that really is valuable is what is going to keep you alive for the next 24 hours. Food and water. So what can you do to secure your future based with that kind of a forecast? Well, we had an article on exactly the subject last time gold prices soared by Mr. Robert Morley back in 2013. And here's how he answered that question. Invest in God. Invest in your relationship with Him. Store up treasures in heaven where moth and rust and quantitative easing can't destroy them. He referenced Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 21. Put your heart in God's work today. This is the only sure investment you can make. God doesn't need your money. He can support His work in all kinds of ways. But God is concerned about your priorities. Where are you spending your time and energy? God wants to know what is important to you. What do you put first in your life? What do you spend your money on? What do you sacrifice for? Invest in gold if you wish, but if you really care about your future, he writes, invest in the one true source of protection. Invest in God. We can invest our time, our focus in God, in supporting His work. And I promised practical ways to do this. Well, if you're relatively new to us, new to this program, here's one very simple and practical way to do that, to invest in God, to invest in your relationship with your Creator. You can read our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Don't just skim it online. Get your own free print copy. And like I said at the first half, you can order that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to the library tab at the top right-hand corner there, and you can read it online, but really get the print copy and study it. This is a great way to invest in God, to invest in your future. You know, that book will give you an outline of God's plan. It will show you that God is active in world history, in current and future events, affecting real life, affecting us now. It will explain why a loving God will allow suffering to become so bad that no amount of gold can buy a mouthful of bread. It will explain God's plan in world events and what you can do about it. You can study that along with your Bible and really, you know, let God talk to you through the pages of your Bible. You can pray about that book with him. And that's a wonderful way to invest your time, your energy, in your relationship with your Creator. Like I said, you can get all of that material at our website, thetrumpet.com. Now, I believe Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back again in the hot seat or the hot standing desk tomorrow. Hopefully, we have our website back again soon as well for you to be able to listen to all these shows. If you have any feedback, like I said at the start, please do get in touch. You can email us at td@kpcg.fm. Especially with some of these new projects, we'd really welcome your input. And you can tune in online here at kpcg.fm at 101.3 on the FM dial.